Hello and welcome to episode 338 of Radio Free Nintendo, the Nintendo podcast for grown-ups. I am your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me as always are John Lindemann.
Johnny, it's awesome to be here.
I know. James Jones.
Hi.
Hey. And Guillaume is trying to fix his internet. He will be popping in a little bit later, we think. And we actually have a special guest for at least a little while, Mr. Billy Berghammer.
Holy crap.
Yes, and this show is just crazy on every level. We have decided to mix things up a little bit and do listener mail first, and we're going to do new business later, just for a change of pace, just to check it out. We've actually got a bunch of emails we were going to do last week and didn't have time for, so we're going to kick off right away with those. Of course, the address, as always, is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, and Billy, could you read the first email for us, please?
Okay, cool. Tim from New Hampshire writes, I haven't owned a console since the PS2 and N64. He had them side by side. I missed out on the PS3, Xbox 360, Wii because none of them felt to fit my personality. I've been using my iPad for all my gaming recently and thought consoles and dedicated handhelds were a bit unnecessary. Boy, was I wrong. Mm-hmm. I started off by picking up the Wii U. The message that the Wii U isn't just for casual gaming clicked with me. The gamepad is a great way to play games. I love the fact that I can take the gamepad to bed and enjoy most games entirely on the gamepad. It's pretty amazing how you can take this big console and play it just on the gamepad. I live in a studio, I'm assuming apartment, so range has never been an issue for me. So overall, I'm loving the Wii U. I'm not sure why so many people are casting doom and gloom on this awesome successor to the Wii. I have not owned a console in over 10 years, and this is a great way to get back into gaming. I had such an amazing experience with the Wii U that I decided to pick up a 3DS XL. I'm very much a Nintendo fan once again after not being in this world for over a decade.
Interesting.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's great. I mean, you know, it's true. A lot of people are doom and gloom right now, and I think there is a case to be made for feeling that way. But there are definitely people who are enjoying these systems a lot, you know, and, especially I think, you know, like it's just like for me, like buying a Vita, part of the appeal for Vita for me is that I never had a PSP. So I kind of get two systems in one. With sure. Wii U, you get a Wii also. So if you skipped over the Wii, there's tons of games in the back catalog that you can check out for the first time. So there's no shortage of stuff, you know, and if you don't play games every single day, then, you know, there may be enough Wii U games to play. It kind of depends on, it's a larger picture of how many other systems do you have and how much time a week do you spend playing games and how long do you play your games for? I mean, Billy, I know you've been like, you know, just hammering away at the Wii U lately with one game in particular.
Well, yeah, with Monster Hunter, but you know, as I was talking with Lindy before, like if it weren't for Monster Hunter, I don't know if I'd be firing up my Wii U for anything. You know, I haven't finished Mario yet, but I'm close, and that's all I'm really playing on it. Nothing else has really piqued my interest too much yet. You know, I'm looking forward to seeing what they announce tomorrow, and, you know, obviously with Wind Waker coming this year, I know I'm going to be all about it, but yeah, Monster Hunter is, I've totally got sucked in again. I played a little bit of Tribe, but like this is kind of, I mean, it's called Ultimate, and I do think it is the best way to play this game. Online works, voice chat doesn't suck ass, it looks really good, and on top of it, I'm also playing it on 3DS, so, I can't bring my Wii U pad to my bedroom, because it has to go through two walls, and it just breaks connection, so if I want to play in bed, and I'm just doing single player stuff, you know, I dump my save over to the 3DS, and you know, it works. I mean, it works fantastic. But yeah, I think, you know, but I really like playing on the Wii U. I think, you know, and I use the gamepad functionality where I dump everything. I take most of the UI and put it on the pad and keep my TV screen clean. And it just, it looks great. And, I'm very impressed with it. But that being said, you know, I mean, I obviously this guy, you know, Tim has been away from gaming for so long. This is a good kind of, but it's funny too, because he said that in his email that he says that this wasn't just for casual gamers anymore, but I can't honestly think that or say that the Wii U is a hardcore gaming system, because there's not all the games are there.
I don't know that it's a gaming system right now. I mean, I don't know who the Wii U is for. I don't think Nintendo knows who the Wii U is for. We would have to have a lot more sample size in the game selection to have a feel for whether they're trying to push it at any given market, you know?
Sure, but I mean, you know, you said the message that the Wii U isn't just for casual gaming. I mean, I don't know about that anymore, because there's not, I mean, how many core games are really actually on the system? I mean, I do think it's a gaming system. You know, I know people also use it for, sure. But I know people that also use it for like TV, which I can't use because I've got a receiver. But, you know, I think it's a great thing for Netflix and everything else. But I've got 10 different devices in my apartment that can do all those things. So,
yeah. I find it interesting that he's the epitome of a lapsed, you know, player who Nintendo was really going after with the Wii, but he actually got hooked by the Wii U. I find that quite interesting. I'd like to actually know more around his reasoning in terms of why he chose the Wii U and why now.
Who knows?
You
know,
I don't know either. I mean,
explain your choices.
I think most of us who have bought a Wii U so far are a little bit crazy. You know, maybe there's not a good way to explain it. I mean, I got it because I was excited and I wanted one. You know, I wanted to play Mario, but that I wouldn't call Mario a system seller for me. It's just the game that I wanted the most at launch.
Right. I mean, I didn't even want it.
The Wii U itself was the system seller, but us guys we're not normal. You know? We don't make these decisions the same way that 99% of other people do.
Well, yeah. I mean, you buy every Nintendo thing that comes out, right? You're the early adopters, and that's pretty much mostly who has bought the Wii U as of now, is early adopters. So, and that's the problem. Eventually, that number dwindles and ends, and then once you have that market captured, then it comes to capturing the people that are more, you know, casual about their choice of console. What does the Wii U have to interest them? And right now, doesn't really have a whole lot, I don't think.
Sure, and I think early adopters pick it up. You know, obviously, you said the same thing, Mario. Like, Mario was the gateway in, and it's like Mario plus the eventual promise that all of your Nintendo favorites, plus hopefully some third-party stuff, are going to be on this system.
Yeah, but I think you'll see more uptake.
I wouldn't be too hopeful there. I mean, we found out today that EA isn't developing any Wii U games right now. Not even FIFA?
I wasn't there for the N64 days, but you guys all bought into it. So what is so different?
Yeah. Bought into
What is so different between then
and
now?
N64 was weird. There were third parties that were on board the N64 train, especially in the early days, in the first few years of the system.
Let's talk about the N64 launch and see how many games were actually there at launch.
Well, the N64 was the birth of the Nintendo drought.
Right. I mean, at launch, no, there wasn't much there, but it was it had one ground-shaking game versus New Super Mario Brothers.
Which Wii U just doesn't have anything remotely
but
like Mario 64.
In terms of at this point in the N64's life, there were games coming out for it, not like there were for the PlayStation, but there was a steady stream of titles. Mm-hmm. This you know, the real drought came about 2 years before the N64 went on its merry way. Mm-hmm. And in that last year, that was when there's one game a month. You better enjoy this game for 30 days, because that's the only game you're going to get.
Yeah, but the N64, for its first year, wasn't, you know, a crap. It wasn't like the GameCube was.
GoldenEye came out in its first year.
Yeah.
Right. No, it didn't.
And here's what I would say, Billy.
No,
even though at this
uh-oh,
point
uh-oh.
In
Stats Fight.
Go look at the dates. GoldenEye was delayed a lot.
GoldenEye came out in 1997.
Okay.
Yes, less than 1 year after the N64 launch. And my point that I was about to make is that even though at this point in the N64's life, GoldenEye wasn't out yet, we knew about it and we were getting excited for it. And what my problem right now is, we don't know what to be excited about on Wii U. I think it's very telling that Billy is not only currently playing a remake on his Wii U, and that's the one game that has him really actively engaging with it, but the game that he mentioned as being the most anticipated thing that he's looking forward to later in the year is also a remake.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where are the new, exciting, big games? I'm not saying they don't exist. I'm saying Nintendo should not have had us wait 6 months through the first part of 2013 to find out about them. You know, holding all your cards to E3, there's a case for doing that and there's a case against it. You probably want to balance it out a little bit, you know? And the problem is when the launch, I mean, we're getting a Nintendo Direct tomorrow. We don't know exactly what's in it, but they've said it's going to be focused on the summer releases for Wii U. Those are going to be all basically launch titles that were just delayed and delayed and delayed.
Right. It's going to be Pikmin. It's going to be Wonderful 101. And
yes.
That's it.
Please release these games. I'm not complaining, but oh my God, release these games. They are so backed up on games that were supposed to come out a long time ago that we don't even know about the next wave of games that we should already be excited and hyped up about.
Mm-hmm. But going back to what you're saying, so I did use Wikipedia, so you were right. But I think GoldenEye was also supposed to be a launch title, like in the launch window, and that kept getting pushed back. So, but it was sporadic. It wasn't like...
Yeah, I mean yeah,
this
like,
is really bad. I mean, this yeah, is...
It's like, really bad. I mean, at least for the 64, you had Wave Race 64. You had stuff like that. I mean, there was something...
Your default go-to game is Wave Race.
Well, but that's a good game, though, man. That's a good game.
Wave Race is awesome.
But, I mean, yeah. Compared to anything on Wii U... Really? I mean,
sure.
Like outside of Super Mario, I mean, there's nothing else.
Yeah. Well, you had Mario Kart, you had Star Fox.
It's true.
But Billy's right. Mario Kart 64 was already out at this point.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's a monster. I mean, you know, again, and I'll say a lot of us spent 6 months playing Mario 64. And I'm not saying you can just, you know, poop out a Mario 64 caliber game every generation. But maybe don't launch the system if you don't have that big idea that really makes people want it right up front. You know, this was just about the softest launch I can think of. And, you know, it's really hilarious to me to, if you go back to E3 last year and people complaining about, you know, the stuff that they showed at the E3 press conference, and Reggie's like, look, we got a Mario game ready for launch. I don't know what more you want from me. It's like, maybe show me something I haven't done before. And, you know, Nintendo Land definitely had some fresh ideas, but that's just not a product that is really going to get people excited.
I don't think they did a good job marketing Nintendo Land either.
No, they definitely didn't.
No, there really wasn't much said about it.
Well, partly because they weren't really trying to sell it. I mean,
no.
they gave away a lot of copies of it. And so they didn't, I would guess they didn't feel like they needed to budget a ton of like commercial advertising
but, you know,
for that game.
I think that would be a tactical mistake because ultimately that is the game that would help you sell the system.
Hey, they advertised the shit out of Wii Sports and they never sold a single copy of it in America.
Right, but Wii Sports is a lot more accessible and that's why it was so successful. Like, Nintendo Land is a hell of, you know, I think last time I was on the show, I even said the same thing. It's not a Wii Sports. Like,
it's not even close.
I couldn't even, you know, I haven't even shown my parents what the Wii U pad looks like, but they would be freaking terrified to try any of that stuff. But bowling, sure, got that. You know, tennis, of course, you know, totally on board. So, it's, you know, and especially now that we're seeing with where the third parties are going or not going, it's pretty scary. I mean, maybe there's going to be more announced at E3. I don't know. I mean, that's, you know, we'll talk about that later, but like, it's pretty scary. And what's also kind of hilarious is the fact that, you know, going back to Monster Hunter, it's the first real online game with voice chat that is works really well. I think Black Ops does it too, but like, I mean...
Yeah, Black Ops voice chat works pretty well. And the online definitely works well.
Yeah, but I'm, you know, extremely impressed. And it also does connectivity. So it does like all of the pillars of what Nintendo does. And it's not from Nintendo.
Yeah, that's always the case. Nintendo is always the last ones to really push forward in that stuff, it seems.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
With GameCube, it was Phantasy Star. You know, so, but yeah, I don't know. It's also interesting that this guy does play off screen a lot. I know a lot of people that are hardcore Wii U, that's what they do. That's their, they have families or they have, you know, living situations that it works really well. I totally get that. I would be all about it, but like,
I would too.
I'm, I just got a new TV. I'm using it, and screw anybody else. That's what I'm going to use, you know. But I, and it's just in my living situation, it doesn't work really well. But I see why that's a big thing for people.
It's a huge, case of like your mileage may vary. It just depends on your personal situation, whether or not that's really useful or not. For some people, it's a huge deal. But, you know, I would say this is again an opportunity where this is a cool feature that other systems don't have. And it's something that I think makes sense to people pretty quickly. The idea that you can play these big console games and just, I mean, how hard is it to show, like a 10 second video of someone playing a game on their TV and then just kind of dragging their finger down and moving it down to the gamepad and then just walking away and keep playing it? Like, that's not hard to do. You know why that hasn't happened? Cause the games Nintendo has released for the system don't even support that feature.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's quite baffling.
You can do it on Mario. But yeah, you know,
they showed the feature in European commercials, and then they got like some sort of, you know, like they got sued over it, or I don't know, like for fraudulent advertising, because not every game does that.
Really?
No, but yeah, like people, like the apparently the ad gave the impression that you could play any game portably on the gamepad.
Oh, I wonder if they're gun shy about that now.
Yeah,
that's,
I don't know,
crazy.
Yeah, I wouldn't have expected that, but maybe they didn't put the right disclaimer on the commercial or something.
Europe is weird, though. I mean, it's a different game.
It might have been the UK. In the UK only.
It may have different regulations on that stuff.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to the next email. And by the way, Guillaume is here, everybody.
Hey!
You sound a lot better now than you did before.
Yes.
All right, John, why don't you read the next email?
All right, Clifford writes, I am very surprised by Nintendo's strange announcement of how they are handling E3. I don't really understand how the media is supposed to cover Nintendo this year, and I'm more interested in the media's take on the Nintendo Direct video than hearing hands-on impressions of demos on the show floor. I have yet to understand why Nintendo, or for that fact any company, just won't release the demos directly to the public, since playing a demo is 1,000 times more interesting than hearing about it. Since the original Wii was built from E3, why is Nintendo skipping it? Do you foresee a future in which Nintendo has E3 demos for the public with a truly direct marketing approach to the public?
Hmm.
So we've talked about this on the show before, a sort of like crazy idea Nintendo could totally do. And I think I even insinuated that they could even be super duper evil and charge for them. However, the obvious answer as to the downside of making the demos available to the public is that they can't control the environment in which you play the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to explain, but if you've played an E3 demo, there's usually a Sherpa there trying to guide you through the experience. And sometimes it doesn't feel like it's necessary, but it's their way of making sure your experience is as optimal as possible.
Yeah, right. But at the same time, I think that at E3, the only people who actually need those Sherpas are the people who don't know that you can hold the button to run in Mario, like that girl last year. And
sure.
Then,
well,
like everyone
well,
who
it
has...
depends, Guillaume. It depends. When you're especially last year or the past couple years where they've had the 3DS and they've had the Wii U, when you're dealing with hardware that no one's ever played before, sometimes it does help to have someone there to actually teach you how to use the controller. And when you're playing games that aren't sequels to things that are very well understood, sometimes it's nice to be like, how am I supposed to get through this part?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
You don't understand the game mechanics.
Well, yeah, I agree. But at this point, the Wii U is almost a year old and the 3DS is like people are very familiar with it. So you don't really need that as much.
But yeah, I don't think it has anything to do with the Sherpas or any of that stuff. It's because these games are early works in progress. And that's how they're showing it. It doesn't matter where you're playing it or anything like that, because Nintendo shows these games and they have the outside booth. They have the upstairs areas for press and for marketing and all those people. They have behind closed doors areas. So it's still going to be on an HD TV. You're still going to have a Wii U pad. It's still going to be loud as shit. It'd probably be better, more optimal in your own home. But the simple fact of the matter is the reason why they're not doing that is A, they'd have to package it separately and have to create a downloadable thing for this demo, and the fact that it's also pre-release code, and they'd rather you only saw 15, 20 seconds of that. Microsoft did demos for Xbox 360 like the second year or the first year after the Xbox was out, and you know there were a few games, but it wasn't any of their like top tier titles. So no, it's just because
it were games that were like just about to come out.
No, there were some games that were still fairly early, but that being said, you know, it's all pre-release code. They don't want that out there because then people are just going to think, oh, well, this is how this game's going to be when it comes out. So no, it has nothing to do with Sherpas.
Yeah. Or if it hard locks, you know, you have people complaining about it in forums and
stuff like that. Then the developer has to do all this testing and extra shit on it. No, it's just, it's not cost effective at all. It's already a pain in the ass for these developers to, while they're developing a game, develop an E3 demo. Like, that sucks for them. Especially when they're basically super close to crunch mode on, especially if it's a fall release, you know. No, they don't need to do that. Or the game could be done already and they're on a different project. No, it's just,
I think there are potential advantages to taking this kind of, you know, guerrilla tactic, you know, direct demo thing. I don't think any company is ready to do it, and especially not Nintendo. I would love for them to do it, and I think it would be a very bold move, and you know, you'd have to get these demos ready a lot earlier in order to polish them extra hard, in order to make sure that when people play them, they're not kind of blown away by your ineptitude. And because, you know, the average person doesn't understand that games aren't always perfect halfway through development. But I mean, the main way you can tell that this isn't actually going to happen anytime soon is Nintendo doesn't even release demos of the games that they've finished, much less the games they haven't finished.
Yeah, that's true. And you have I don't know if you guys read that article. I think it was by Chris Ecker. He was pointing out some study about how demos don't help sell your games. In fact, they can't be detrimental to sales. And that apparently if you want to maximize sales, you show a video. Because, you know, like his theory was that when you allow people to play a demo, they get the satisfaction of having that experience that they wanted to try out. And so they might feel less inclined to actually go out and purchase the game.
Well, did he have data to back this up, or is this just his feeling?
No, like he had charts. I don't know.
Yeah, because there's
he was
about
more than
20
just talking
years
out of his ass.
There's about 20, 30 years of data on the PC market that says otherwise.
Really?
And not to mention games like the original BioShock and a lot of other games that have had tremendous sales that even the publisher directly attributed to having a great playable demo for the public. So I'm sorry. I mean, we've heard that before. Nintendo has basically been saying that forever. And I've never believed that it's true. I think it's paranoid. It's akin to saying that, like, you know, online pirates are stealing all of our game sales. It's just bullshit.
I disagree totally.
But do you think that is due to the PC market having 20 years of those things out there so they know what to expect, so therefore they don't judge demos as harshly? Saying that basically people on consoles expect things to be perfect because that's all they ever play.
No, to be diplomatic, I think John is saying that console gamers expect things to be more polished because they usually are.
They just don't have the experience with demos. They don't know what to expect. And also, the whole console experience is the fact that you never get things really... in a working stage, whereas the PC market, it's a bit more...
Not releasing demos for console gamers is a pretty good way to make sure they continue to not have any experience with demos and to not understand how to react.
Well,
to
what I'm saying is the console ones have to be more polished.
Yeah,
because console gamers
that.
Expect a higher level of polish than PC gamers probably do.
I totally
PC gamers
agree
are more.
That's why you get a lot of betas on consoles that are basically just glorified demos.
I think the important thing about what this guy is asking via email is, like, he says he's very surprised by Nintendo's announcement of how they're handling E3. The only thing that's different is they're not having a major, huge press conference.
Yeah. Which to me makes a lot of sense
and everybody, I've heard this, like, there were three editorials on Nintendo World Report, like, this is fine, this is why they're doing it, and totally get it. I've been to, this would have been my 14th one, and I I've listened and I understand why people think they understand everything like that, but I think from a perception view, it's bad. It's like, Sony and Microsoft are going to be bringing their crazy super HD high-end crazy shit to E3 this year, but by Nintendo not even just saying we're just not even gonna, you know, bother, like, sure, it's gonna be playable and everything like that, like, great, but still having that spectacle is super important, you know.
It sort of makes you look like an also-ran.
Well, which James, they are this year.
I mean,
I'm sorry, I hate to judge it before the shows even happen, before we even know what anybody's showing, but Nintendo is probably an also-ran at E3 this year, and it's not due to quality of games, it's due to quality of announcements.
You still got to show up to play, regardless if you think your team's going to lose.
Well, no, they don't. They don't have to show up to play. I mean, look at TGS, you know. Nintendo, I mean, this is a different path towards Nintendo not even coming to E3, which Rockstar already does, which, you know, Take-Two already does, which Activision did that 1 year when Activision just decided. Activision was the biggest company in the world, the biggest game publisher in the world that year, and they decided, we're not even going to show up to E3. We'll have a party.
That being said, like, E3 is always the major platform holders do their big dance. You should still do your big dance. I still think it's very important to do so. And I think perception-wise, that just, you know... And it's crazy, too, because, like, now at least their games are in HD. They used to show freaking Wii games on giant projectors, and it's, like, pixelated hell. And, like, now your games are going to look good. Like, you can't tell me that Wind Waker in HD isn't going to look sick as shit on a big projector. Like, I'm sorry. I really... Unless it's not. But, like, it's going to look better than a lot of the other stuff we've seen in the past. So, I mean, I think that's, you know, who knows how they're going to show it. I don't think the press are still going to cover what Nintendo does. And I think Nintendo Directs are a great way for them to still have their day in the sun. But that being said, you know, that only hits a niche market. That's not getting the USA Today's and the New York Times and LA, you know, whatever. Like, it's not going to, and CNN, I mean, it's not going to garner that much as much excitement or the viewing. I mean, it's just not, you know, it is frustrating.
Well, I do agree that all of those media outlets you just named are not coming to this media reception thing that they're doing where we get to go in and play the games. I mean, I think it's great that we get a little extra time to play the games, but they're letting us in for an hour to play stuff before E3 opens. I mean, I can play maybe two demos in an hour. It's not that helpful, you know. There is definitely something to be said for the press conference. It's a way for them to communicate their message and to show the parts of the game that they think are the most impressive and to develop a story. And it's really interesting this year that Nintendo is basically telling the media that we get to write their story. They don't get to write it.
Isn't that what the media does pretty much every year anyway, though?
No, it's not. And, you know, I challenge the notion that this cancellation of the press conference is a sign that Nintendo doesn't care about the media at E3. I think if Nintendo didn't care about the media, they wouldn't go to E3. That's the only reason to even show up at E3 anymore. And, you know, they're having this reception that they've never done before where they're going to let us in and have some, you know, more exclusive time. I think it's still going to be crowded, but we'll get a chance to play a couple of extra games before everything just goes totally nuts. And that's a good thing. They could have done that in addition to having a press conference. I mean, I remember back when the Nintendo press conference used to be the day before E3, mm-hmm. not the day of. So I don't know why they couldn't just go back to doing that. I think it comes down to basically the reason they canceled the press conference is because they didn't want to do a press conference. And after you look at the way it went last year, it's hard to blame them. I mean, they brought everything they had. It wasn't enough. They told the story very poorly, and everybody shat on their face. And by the way, it cost them a fortune to put that thing on. So they spent a lot of money and a lot of effort and got nothing out of it.
They're still getting the theater for the marketing thing. So it's like, you know, I'm sure there's still a cost difference, but still, like, you know, then show up. Then that's their fault for showing up with not enough and throwing, you know, Ubisoft and all their partners on showing old games. I mean, that's their fault. So
absolutely. But I think you have to imagine this has happened so many times. They've had like maybe one awesome E3 press conference in the past 5-6 years. And it's happened so many times that I think they look at it and they say, maybe we're not good at this. You know, maybe we've created an atmosphere at E3 where people come here looking for things to tear down, or their expectations are such that we can never satisfy them at an E3 press conference. And maybe we should try something different and just not devote our time and our energy and our money to that particular brand of format. What concerns me is that the press conference itself is such an iconic part of E3 that for a lot of people, that is E3. That's the only part that they watch. That's the only part that they read about or care about. And I heard even on shows like Weekend Confirmed with your friends and other places that I listen to, there are people, and I think they were corrected in every case by other people on the show, but there were people going on other podcasts who thought that Nintendo had completely pulled out of E3 and just wasn't even going to show up anymore.
Well, this is this email.
Which is completely wrong.
I mean, that's what I know, but that's what this email is saying. Like, he's no offense, Clifford, but you're kind of wrong. Like, that's why I was clearing up. Like, the only thing that's changed is they're not having a press conference.
Well, he's not saying that I don't think Clifford, I think Clifford's just saying that was the only part I cared about. You know, he's like, I don't care about the impressions. I would say the hands-on impressions are the most important thing at E3. More the game announcements, games could be announced a week before E3 or a week after E3. It doesn't matter. That's all timing shit. The important part of E3 that cannot be done anywhere else is you get this mass of media together and they get to play the demos and talk about them in a way that they don't any other time of the year. And it's all at once. And that is the most important thing about E3. And if you're not reading hands-on impressions of E3, I don't understand why you even care about E3. I don't even know why you're paying attention to it.
Because you want to know what's coming out for your system of choice at the end of the year.
Sure, but
I mean, this is sort of the opportunity where you don't get to unwrap the presents, but you get to find out what they are.
But do those Nintendo Directs disseminate to everybody else? I mean, what I was actually saying about what Sessler said, and I'm saying this from secondhand knowledge, so I'm fairly certain he said this, but Nintendo press conferences had the highest ratings out of all the press conferences.
They did, yeah. Yes.
And that disseminates.
I've heard that as well.
That, you know, that means that's getting out to people. Now,
but won't, I don't, like, whatever Nintendo Direct that they have also have high ratings? I mean, like, if they show the retro game at a conference or at a Nintendo Direct, they're still showing a retro game, Retro Studios.
It's a matter of how many people are going to see it. I would just say, just because it had the highest ratings doesn't mean it was good for Nintendo. You know, if they put on a shitty press conference and it's very disappointing, then you just had a very high rating for a very disappointing show.
So if Nintendo shits in the woods with a Nintendo Direct, does anybody hear it? I don't know.
Well, that's what we're not really clear on.
So one thing we do know, though, is we know Nintendo knows how many eyes they're going to get on Nintendo Direct because they did one last year at almost the exact same time.
Mm-hmm.
They can at least give us a decent – or internally, they can at least make a decent approximation of what kind of numbers they should expect from this.
I mean, now a lot of don't know everything that they're doing. I mean, who knows? It still could be their Nintendo Direct could be broadcast on Spike TV or whatever.
Yeah.
Else.
Oh,
we,
yeah.
We don't know that.
Totally could be. I mean, I'm sure it'll be scheduled. It won't be one of these 7 a.m. Pacific time Nintendo Directs that they've been doing lately. It'll probably be prime time. It'll probably be, you know, they'll probably have the ability to stream it on other websites besides their own. I mean, there'll be stuff going on around it. They'll probably have, announcements they sprinkle throughout the 3-day noise extravaganza that is the show.
Sure, but
stuff they announce in the evenings.
That's going to be noise in comparison to two brand new consoles that are coming from the two heavy hitters right now. So,
Billy, I actually have a question for you specifically based on your specific past experience. Having worked at G4, having worked for a TV channel that covers video games, do you think it would be appropriate for a channel like that or like Spike or whatever to basically take a beta tape from Nintendo that has the new Direct on it and, yeah, let's say it's 45 minutes long, which it could easily be around E3, right? They're going to have a lot of stuff to talk about. Put that in, and now that's your channel for the next 45 minutes. There's no commercial breaks. There's no commentary while this is happening. I mean, at least I know, and I know people are thinking, if you just show up to the press conference with a camera, it's not that different, right? But the press conference is an event, and a lot of people are there covering it, and at least feels like journalism because you're with a camera.
But at the press conference, aren't they using pool feeds? So in the end, it's not really. I mean, it's no different except it's not live.
I don't know. I mean,
I can't answer that because I don't do television programming. I mean,
I'm about 80% confident they're pool feeds.
It's a feed. I mean, they're, you know, when you're taking direct feed for when I was working doing web stuff, I mean, everybody is jacked into a box and they are feeding you that stuff. Back in the day, it used to be everybody's shitty camcorder, but you know, now at least they do it professionally because then they can control what is being shot. So, but that being said, I mean, programming is built around if you have advertising that can support it. And I would say so, But I don't know. I mean, I know a lot of, you know, I mean, if I didn't go to E3 every year, my ass would be parked in front of the couch with popcorn watching all the press conferences.
Sure.
I mean, that's what I would want to know. And I'd want to know, and I know, I'm sure there are a lot of people, I've seen it in forums and just heard, but like, some people take off work that day. You know, mm-hmm. that's what they want to do, and they want to, you know, they're in gaff if it doesn't explode, or, you know, wherever, you know, I mean, that's just how they absorb and consume E3. But like, yeah, I don't know, man, like, who knows how it's going to go, but like, perception wise, I think just not having a press conference, it's not the whole E3, but like, that's a big part of it, especially when you're a platform holder.
It's gonna be really weird. I mean, having been to, you know, 12 or 13 of these press conferences, I will say it's always my favorite part of the week, because it's so exciting and because I'm actually there in person. I mean,
sure.
The pregnant drama of, we don't know what's going to happen, and you know, we might walk out of this room an hour from now, and our whole perception of what Nintendo is all about and why we should be excited about gaming will completely flip, or we could be incredibly depressed for the rest of the year because they're doing Wii music, you know. And it's the fun of not knowing, right?
Yeah.
But I will also say there are lots of other ways to release the kind of information they put out at a press conference.
Oh yeah. Okay. And you'll still get, I mean, to a certain extent, that will still happen. And I think the experience for the average person who's not there, will be somewhat commensurate with what they'd get anyway. I think ultimately they're still going to be parked at home watching a stream on their laptop or on their tablet. And for them, the experience is probably relatively similar.
Oh, it'll be better because it won't be live.
Mm-hmm.
You won't have bad line readings. You won't have demos that don't work.
I mean, the emotional experience of like, oh, whoa, hey, look at that. I mean, Johnny, you might be seeing all Nintendo's announcements while you're still at home. I mean, we don't know when they're going to do it.
Right.
I mean, you may not have even gone to LA yet, which is going to be super weird. I mean, last year, I took off the days to watch press conferences. And, I mean, it was partially to help with the site and partially just because I could.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a whole different experience, obviously. But at the same time, you still have there's a certain social element you get at home doing it, too. I mean, like, I was basically just trolling John on Twitter during the entire Sony press conference.
But isn't that part of the excitement, though? Like,
it is, and I think you can still get that as long as that's like, oh, it's on our YouTube page, and I can go watch whenever you want. I think they still probably need to treat it as something of an event, even though it's not live, which is weird. I think just putting it on the YouTube page, go watch when you want, I think that might diminish the feedback of it. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to find a perfect analog because we haven't had a platform holder do this. The closest thing I could think of is what Konami did 2 years ago when they basically said, we really suck at E3 press conferences. We're terrible at them.
Yeah, we're just going to tape it ahead of time.
Let's just tape it in advance, because I'd been to two Konami press conferences. They were the worst things ever.
They're super
they're pretty
boring.
Awful.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, they were either boring or disasters.
Yeah.
But this is totally different. This is somebody who is traditionally
holder.
One of the anchor press conferences just not doing that.
Yeah. And that is scary. That's really scary.
It's a step into the unknown. What if it's a success? What if it's for them? It works out great. Do we think other platform holders might do it? It's certainly going to be a hell of a lot cheaper than what they're doing now.
It's hard to gauge success.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Sony and Microsoft, people really look for those press conferences, and I think they really like them. You know?
Also, wouldn't you love to be the last one still doing it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, maybe that's it. Maybe that's the plan. They're going to get the other two to drop them and then do them themselves.
Yeah.
Surprise press conference.
I wouldn't want to be the one who cedes that platform to the last standing company.
It's going to be a throwdown.
You know?
Yeah. I'm doing the last press conference.
It's a weird situation, man.
I just don't understand how this could be a bonus. I just...
No, I don't think for us...
For us, it's not a bonus. I think for Nintendo, it may be a bonus.
I can see why Nintendo would have made the decision ultimately.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily agree with all the logistic or the decisions they've made in their heads, but I can understand the thought process that ultimately may have led them to the decision of, let's just not do it this year.
Hey, I could tell you, there's definitely been a couple years where I walked out of the Nintendo press conference and thought, why did they even bother?
Yeah.
And this year, I think last year they thought that. So, you know, that's how we got where we are.
Yeah, but I mean, they've kind of pushed themselves. I think some of that is their own doing. You know what I mean? It's kind of like it's kind of two things. It's, some of it is their own doing in the way that they treat the press, and some of it is the way the press treats them.
Yeah,
it's been a butting of heads, and really nobody plays Nintendo not playing the game that everybody else expects them to play for really no apparent reason aside from the fact that it's just Nintendo.
Hey, other platform holders have taken shots too. I mean, when they announced the PlayStation 3 and they announced the price and all that sort of stuff, like, it was a shitstorm. Like,
it was a disaster.
And that was a function of it being a terrible press conference.
Yeah. You know, it's like Nintendo's not the only company that people are cynical to, all right? Let's be honest here.
People are cynical for everything.
You know?
The worst thing you can do as a press conference is make a press conference that plays into all the most cynical jokes about you as a company.
Mm-hmm.
And the Wii Music press conference is a great example of that. The PlayStation 3 announcement press conference was like a caricature of the cynical depiction of Sony.
So I know, Billy, we've kept you long past when you were expecting to leave. So before we go, why don't you give a plug to the event that you were excited about?
Yeah, so I haven't really headed up, but like, because, you know, I've been playing a lot of Monster Hunter Ultimate on Wii U, and the site's done community nights before, and there's actually, holy crap, an online game for the Wii U that people are playing. So we've been doing these community nights. Tonight we're doing one. Obviously, you're going to be hearing this after it, but there's going to be another one on Monday coming up. It'll be in the evening, probably. We haven't designated a specific time, but most likely it's going to be like 5 to 9 o'clock Pacific. So what's that? 8 to 11.
Yep.
Eastern
time. Monday the 20th.
So Monday, hop in. You'll see a story on the site. You know, follow this. You know, Nintendo World Report on Twitter. And join us. It's a lot of fun. And what's really, you know, we did the first one last week, and it was a lot of fun. It was just a lot of guys that have been with the site for a really long time that haven't ever played a game online with using voice before. I know this is all crazy pants concepts here, but it's really fun. So yeah, if you have a Wii U and you play Monster Hunter, unlike Lindemann, you should join us. It's a lot of fun. So,
all right, cool, man. Thank you so much for coming by, and hopefully we'll talk to you at E3, if not before.
Yeah, would love to come on while I have some free time. So. Yeah, we'll figure it out. But thanks a lot for having me on, and you know, would love to be on again soon.
Awesome, dude. Go hunt some monsters, ultimately.
Yep. I'm going to kill them all.
Cool, dude. Okie doke. Well, thank you again, Billy, and we'll talk to you soon. And we're going to press on now with at least one more email here, and Guillaume is going to read that one.
Yes, Tensor writes, I've recently found myself in a stable economic position, one that allows for a more flexible gaming budget. As such, I've been pondering an upgrade from the original Gangsta 3DS to the 3DS XL. Handheld gaming consumes up the majority of my free time, so my question isn't really if the 3DS XL is worth the value, but rather, is the 3DS due for yet another iteration? I know full well the RFN crew's amazing prognostication ability. Would you guys mind putting on your collective Swami hats and tell me if the 3DS will get another variation, when it will be announced, and how will it differ?
So real quick, he's basically saying he's going to take whatever we say and just assume the opposite.
Well, I think, you know, like, I think the most straightforward answer would be that there is going to be a new iteration when sales slow down in Japan, right?
Probably. No, it'll happen right before sales would have slowed down.
Yeah, really, I mean, I think it'll be a while. I mean, I think there will be one, but I think it will be a couple years.
Yeah, I think they've proven to be quite content to pump out special editions and special colors of the XL. So
yeah,
or the LL, as it is known in Japan. Well, I expect to see that trend continue for at least a little while.
You know, the XL came out so early.
Mm-hmm. It did. I mean, it's really kind of insane how fast it got a revision, and it wasn't. It wasn't like a situation with the original DS where it was so clearly broken.
Right.
True. Yeah, it was awful.
It was just they saw an opportunity to increase the sales, and they saw an opportunity to fix a handful of nagging issues the system had, and they took
They probably were surprised by how popular the XL was compared to the DSi, the normal DSi, right? Like that.
Yeah, the XL did do very well for them, and it makes sense. That's why they persisted the branding, and the concept of bigger is better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they let me tell you, I think you know people make fun of Nintendo for constantly refreshing their hardware. I think it will only happen more, not less, than it has in the past.
Well, yeah, I think people are more accustomed to it with things like cell phones having yearly iterative versions.
It's that Nintendo has to refresh their hardware so that it doesn't seem totally outdated versus these things that, you know, the iPads and the iPhones that they are competing with. And, you know, it really helps also, you know, these systems are sold at retail primarily, and they're not sold through, you know, weird subscription services and stuff like that. So having a retail presence is very important for them, and refreshing a new version makes it a lot easier for them to get attention in the retail space and, you know, to get people looking at the thing again. It also gives them a lot more price options over time, and it allows them to bring extra attention to game releases, which they might care about in the long run.
They can launch a game alongside a hardware revision and they get essentially a twofer in the news story.
Yep. So it will happen.
It's so strange how Nintendo, like, they will have revisions for their consoles, their home consoles, and make them cheaper. But their revisions for their handhelds actually get more expensive.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, I can see that because the handheld market is sort of, you know, you don't start at a super high price point, whereas with consoles, you start at a high price point and want to work your way down.
That hasn't been really true with the 3DS or even the DS. I mean, like they jumped from before the DS, they would never go over $99. But then with the DS, they try, okay, let's go for 130. And then, you know,
it was 150.
At 150. Yes. Oh, wow. Yeah. So yeah. And they keep going up and up and up, you know?
Well, I mean, are they back at the 150 price point yet?
No idea.
With the regular
179, I think.
Because the regular 3DS was how much at launch?
$250.
Yeah,
at launch.
I think it's down to $150 now, and you can get an XL for like $189. But it also goes on sale sometimes. You can get an XL for like almost, you know, $150 or $160, which is crazy.
Yeah,
it's an awesome piece of hardware.
I'm just wondering like what kind of hardware upgrade they can come up with that would actually justify a price increase.
They don't have to. They just have to give you something that looks like it's worth the extra money. It's not a matter of putting new functionality in. It's a matter of presenting it in such a way that you think, ah, this is worth spending extra for. In the case of the XL, it was, we'll make the screens bigger. And ultimately, from a hardware standpoint, it is the same device. It doesn't have any extra functionality. It just has bigger screens.
It's contoured slightly better. Exactly. I'm wondering what they can come up with that they could actually sell to people and say,
chrome it, the whole thing.
Oh, no, maybe, maybe the next one's tiny. You know, maybe the next one is the 3DS Micro. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing is that over time, the component costs on these things come down. And so as all the components are miniaturized and are they can make it at a more like mass market price, it allows them to release new versions that are actually cheaper for them to make, but they can sell it for the same price, so they increase their profit margin. So they want you to keep buying these. And, you know, I would also say, we can talk about, you know, how are they really going to like make this thing more comfortable or bigger or whatever, but we've seen with the DSi, they're not afraid to add features either. Like, and potentially even splinter the market. I mean, you know, traditionally we say you don't really want to release a hardware revision that splinters the catalog and makes it so some people can play your game and some people can't. But with DSi, it really was kind of a non-factor. And the features that they added ended up not really being gameplay useful.
No, they basically created a new market just for the DSi.
Yeah. But they did release games like Pokemon Black and White that optionally use the features of the DSi, and if you didn't have a DSi, that's okay. You can still play the game. You just won't have the stupid video chat.
They did that with the Game Boy Color as well. They released a revision that added features and color screens that ultimately could play the majority of the Game Boy Color games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but it did offer a greatly different experience.
I was just saying I could see them releasing. You know, I mean, I know there's been a lot of talk about adding a second pad, but I could actually see them maybe a couple years down the line, releasing one with a second pad, but also the size of the 3DS XL, kind of the best of both worlds sort of thing, right? Because that's kind of, that's about the only place I think they can really take it from here. They've already released one that's a larger size, unless, like Johnny said, they go much smaller or do something like that. But that's the thing with the two pads. I don't know how that would work for the 3DS.
It would be, it'd be an awkward hold.
It would be really weird. So I think that's pretty much the only place they would really go with it, is keep the large size and then just add the second circle pad officially.
They could also just go, you know, really premium on it. I mean, I didn't remember who said it, but the joke was that they could just do it all chrome. But like,
yeah,
you could actually make like a metal 3DS that would be, you know, basically it's really rugged and it just is shiny like the Panasonic Q. And, you know, like there's a market for this stuff. I mean, look at the Vita. It's a lot shinier and it has a lot more metal on it than the 3DS does. And it looks cool, you know? And so it's not useful really, but it's just some people will be like, yes, I want that one. It looks crazy. It feels more luxurious. So I'm willing to buy it again.
And that's the direction you've seen going in the non-feature phone cell phone market, so mm-hmm. smartphones essentially. There's been a dramatic increase in the amount of material that's used that is metallic, or it's kind of a matte finish. Yep. There's been a step away from rubber, even though rubber, in terms of cell phone construction material, is actually a pretty good choice.
Mm-hmm.
It's because people associate this, the chrome, they associate the black metal, they associate the glass surfaces with a high-end product, yep. And ultimately, you can give the exact same phone. One's a plastic and rubber case. One's this chrome metal hard glass monstrosity. And they're going to pick that one because it's the chiker looking design.
They like it better. And that's all it's
more sophisticated.
Come down to. I think the answer to Tensor is go ahead and buy an XL. Like we said, it's probably going to be a while just because XL did come out very early. And right now, 3DS as a platform is accelerating
mm-hmm.
A lot, and it's not going to slow down anytime soon, especially in Japan after the kind of, you know, after Tomodachi and Animal Crossing and Fire Emblem that they've had over there lately. So,
yeah, and I think the other point is that I don't anticipate them adding anything that would significantly diminish your experience with the 3DS XL, which I still can't say. For some reason,
it's because it's kind of a bad name. That's why.
do we think with the competition with smartphones that is the next hardware the thing after 3DS? Is that coming sooner? Do you think?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Because it costs so much to make the hardware for them, to develop it, to design it, to produce it, to market it.
Look at how long it takes to establish the software library. Mm. You know.
Yeah.
Look at how long it's taken them for people to feel like, yeah, I kind of do want a 3DS because there's all these great games for it. I mean, the system's been out 2 years now. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
but you make sure that it's backwards compatible, and perhaps like you make the architecture very similar. You make sure that the developers already know to program for it. Maybe like mm-hmm. perhaps less of a, you know, like it wouldn't be a GBA to DS difference.
Yeah, but they've already made something called the 3DS. What are they going to call it, the 4DS?
I don't know, 3DS 2.
They call it the Game Man. I mean, they call it whatever the fuck they want.
The Game Man.
I mean, a lot of people, when 3DS first came out and it had a lot of trouble early on, a lot of people said, well, that might be the last dedicated handheld Nintendo ever releases. And at the time I said, you're stupid. And, you know, obviously that's been proven to be probably incorrect. I think there will be another handheld after this. Will it be a phone? I mean, their investors are pushing very hard for them to make a phone or to team up with a phone company. I think there's a lot of problems with that as well because people already have a phone. So it's hard to convince them to buy this also.
I mean, I think with this device, there's still nobody else out there really competing with them.
Right.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Vita's been, you know, a horrible flop.
Yep.
So, and even if Vita had done well, you know, if you're really into handheld gaming, it's not that big of a deal to own both. You know?
No.
Yeah,
so
it's not. And
they don't necessarily eat into each other that much. And if anything, I would say Vita's probably benefiting from the fact that 3DS is finally taking off and getting some speed. It looks like Vita might actually pick up some momentum off of that just because, hey, people are playing handhelds again, finally. And the developers are kind of catching a ride on it. So I think they help each other, you know? I certainly don't think PSP hurt DS, you know?
No.
PSP was by far the most successful non-Nintendo gaming handheld ever released by orders of magnitude. Mm-hmm. And did that eat into DS sales? No, DS is the is the highest selling game system ever released. So
yeah, I mean,
I think the competition is good. You know, I wish there was more competition. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but go ahead and buy an XL. It's fucking great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then when the new one comes out, if you want that, you can transfer all your games over to it and then sell your XL and, you know, you get $100 back for it or whatever. Or you give it to a friend. And that's, you know, that's part of why the Nintendo's handhelds become so pervasive, is because they release all these versions and people end up with extras and they give them away to people. And now the install base is just that much larger, you know, because they're not collecting dust, because they're portable. They're easy to give away. You know, you give it away to a younger brother or you give it away to your mom or whatever. And, you know, and then they keep buying games and ultimately it's good for everybody.
Give your mom a Vita.
Yeah, so you should want them to keep releasing new versions of the system. And don't worry, they will.
Yeah, I like I said, I think I really think the whole special edition model is I mean, they're even starting to do them in North America now. This is the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that means we're going to get the Pikachu nipples 3DSs, but that means we're also going to get awesome stuff like Fire Emblem 3DSs. I'm okay with this.
All right, guys. Okay, and James is going to read the last email.
I'm going to read the last email. Frankie writes, "Love the podcast. I think it's great that Nintendo fans like myself have a podcast all about our favorite game company. There's one teensy problem, James Jones. There's a level of cynicism that every video game podcast should have. This is required for comedic value, but James Jones takes it way too far. His cynicism is very rude and hardly funny. Every time he interjects, it's always insulting and never funny. Look, it's not like I don't have a sense of humor. It's just that my, oh, that's a joke detector never goes off when James Jones makes an attempt at it. You could even hear the cringe and imagine the eye rolls of the rest of the crew when James is cackling way too hard at his own non-jokes. Please, for the quality of RFN, either tell him to knock it off and act like a civil person or kick him off the show. Thank you."
Okay, thanks for writing, everybody. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're doing new business. Stick around.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
First up this week, we've got a Japan review for Othello on the Wii U eShop by Don Koopman. Do you know what the board game Othello is? Arc System Works guess you Japanese Wii U owners do, so they made a Wii U version. It's Othello on Wii U. What are you expecting? Next up, we have a feature called the Best of Miiverse Mega Man Edition. With the Miiverse now in browser form, NWR can trow the best artwork of each section and offer it up to our non-Wii U owning readers, like John, as a delightful view into a world of art and asking for yes, please. This week, we're revisiting the Mega Man world, and we find that someone drew a yellow devil in such exacting detail using a gamepad that I simply cannot comprehend what I'm looking at.
All right, and we have NWR Community Night for Monster Hunter Ultimate, games near and dear to my heart. As Billy mentioned in the previous segment, NWR is hosting online sessions of our favorite Wii U online game. Not a lot of competition for the title, but that won't prevent the NWR readers and staff from having fun. Come join the community of hunters hunting with giant bones this Monday. So you best bone up quickly on your monster hunting. Don't worry if you miss the bone work. Keep an eye out for other NWR Community Nights going forward.
You're welcome.
So I guess if you make a mistake during a hunt, is it called a boner? And also, we have an interview, Image Inform Games, by Curtis Bonds and Neil Ronahan. Neil got to sit down with Image Inform's games' Brian Sigurgason to discuss their 3DS eShop hardcore platform mining adventure. What does that phrase mean? Read the interview to find out.
Sounds like Terraria.
But if it will get you excited, I will say you get to dig the world up to make your own platforms.
The Nintendo World Report community has a feature, apparently. What should Retro make? Did you know we had a forum? It's totally acceptable if you don't. They can be intimidating. This week, we'd like to invite you to pull up a chair and tell us what you want to see Retro do before the mystery of her next project is finally cleared up at E3. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Lastly this week, we have a feature, Nintendo Collector's Journal by Justin Berube. Justin's got some Pokemon, some NES, some Mario, and this week some boxed games, including the Game Boy Classic World Cup Soccer, I assume. I don't know if it's a classic because I've never heard of it. And the Game Boy has about a million games. So what do you expect? I expect you to go enjoy this video feature and see if it makes you want to hunt down a box copy of Championship Pool.
That's right. So you can go check out that video feature and all this other great original content, plus the latest news from Nintendo Direct and pre-E3 over at NintendoWorldReport.com. Welcome back to the show, everyone. It's time for new business. Well, normally this is time for listener mail, but we already did that part. So we're going to do new business now, and I thought John Lindemann could go first.
All right, my business, my new business is, my business is being one of the best podcasters ever. Am I right? Am I right?
Yeah.
Mm. My new business, however, thanks to Mr. Guillaume Veillette, is Nano Assault EX.
Don't blame this on me.
Well, it's not really so much blaming it. I just... Guillaume was kind enough to point out that Nano Assault EX was on sale the past week on the eShop for $10, and I like Nano Stray. It's good game, so I figured, hey, you know, I'll try it out. You know, I generally like what Sheenan produces, and, you know, let's see where this goes. So I got it, and I gotta say, it's a lot like Nano Stray in the sense that it's a good shooter, but it's fairly generic. That's my big complaint with it.
Despite the fact that it's all like taking place on the surface of cells and it's all, you know, organic and shit.
Well, the problem is everything kind of, a lot of the stuff could, I mean, you could easily say that this is taking place underwater and I would believe you. A lot of the stuff just doesn't really, it's not really unique looking. It's just kind of like stuff like, the best way I can describe it is a lot of this stuff, you know how, you know, in high school when they show you like the dust mites that are in your bed and they show you that blown up microscopic picture.
And this is, you know, what is feasting on your body.
Yeah. It's a lot of stuff that looks just like that in this game. And that's okay for a while, but after a while, when everything looks like that, it gets kind of tiring. And just a lot of the bosses aren't really too interesting. It has 7 levels. And the way that they're set up is you have 2 or 3 of them in which you collect DNA strands. The whole thing is, I think you're trying to destroy the Nanostray virus. And so what you have to do is, I think you collect the whole overall arching goal of the game is you collect all the DNA strands and then you destroy it. So, because at the end, spoiler alert, you do actually, the very last boss that you fight is Nanostray. It's the actual virus itself, but
whoa.
Oh, is it? I don't remember that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the stuff looks the same, so it's just another kind of amorphous blob with various appendages that you shoot, you know? And so, yeah, so the way that each level is structured is there's 2 or 3 areas in which you collect these DNA strands, and then you clear out all the enemies, and then you actually, then there's the final stage is sort of a, and those are done, the way those are played is, if anybody here has played Super Stardust HD, it's very much like that game where you're on kind of like a globe and you're spinning around it on your ship and shooting enemies as they approach you.
Or so, imagine Super Mario Galaxy, but Mario is a ship and he shoots.
Exactly. Yep. So, and yeah, and then the final stage is, it's like a, I think it's called a synapse stage where you actually are kind of flying through like a 3D, like, you know, you're flying actually forward, kind of like Star Fox style. That's partially kind of what this game reminds me of, is Star Fox. And then that's when you make it to the boss, and then, you know, the bosses have you, you know, a lot of times either you're chasing the boss is running ahead of you and you're shooting it, or you're rotating around the boss and, you know, dodging various things, dodging what it's shooting at you, and, or, you know, dodging, you know, you have to, you know, shoot obstacles, and so you can avoid the boss's shots, stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, it's good, but there was nothing there that was amazing to me. Nothing really wowed me. you know, you have a couple of different guns you could switch between. You have four different power-ups that you can get. You know, one is kind of a homing missile. One, you know, there's two different types of kind of option type things that spin around you to protect you. Then you have one that's kind of like a sort of a neutron bomb that, you know, just blows up and takes everything out around it. And I mean, a lot of the enemies, you know, some of them look like bugs. Some of them look like starfish. Some of them look like leeches. Some of them look like big tubes. I mean, it looks like it's kind of like the theme is sort of like, yeah, it's cellular sort of stuff like that, but it's also kind of looks like a lot of the stuff looks like it could be found on a coral reef, you know, and that's fine, but it's a very generic art style for the entire game to be like that. I mean, the entire game looks like that. So by the end, I was just kind of like, okay, I'm tired of killing the umpteenth, you know, tube that's undulating and shooting stuff at me, because, you know, that's what a lot of the enemies are like. Now, in terms of replay value, there's a lot of stuff, you know, you can, once you beat the story mode of the game, which really doesn't have too much of a story. It's pretty much just a cutscene at the start and a cutscene at the end. But once you beat the story mode, there's an arcade mode in which you can post to online. You can, you know, you play through, you pick one, and you play through, get a score, and then you can post it online.
That seems to be, like, one of the big features that people are really enjoying, because this was, like, one of the first Wii U games that really has, like, good online leaderboards. I guess there's Zen Pinball 2 as well now. Mm-hmm. But this was a launch game, and it was, like, people could actually do something with their friends list. You know, you could actually see what your friends are doing. And that's something that the original 3DS version did not have.
Well, I am playing this on 3DS. This is the re-release of the 3DS version on the eShop.
Oh, that's the one you're playing.
Yeah, this is
the
Wii
U version.
That's Nano Assault Neo.
The names are way too similar.
Yeah, that's Neo, Nano Assault Neo.
Right.
But
So the 3DS one was on sale too, because I picked up the Wii U one while it was on sale.
Okay.
And it is much more of a... I don't think the Wii U one even has a story mode. It is basically just pure setting scores.
No, yeah. And like I've been also playing the, you know, recent. I've also bought the EX version on 3DS, so that's new to me. But then I reviewed back when it came out the Neo version on Wii U, and I had heard people say like, "Oh, of course the 3DS version is better because it's got the story mode and you know it's meatier." But I do think that the game is better in small doses.
It is.
And I think that the Wii U version is all around better. Like, it looks better, of course. Like, I mean, there's no 3D, but the HD really makes up for that. And I think also that there's more enemies on screen. There's more action. I'm not that far into the 3DS version, but there's not that much going on at any time, I find. But in the Wii U version, you're constantly surrounded.
Now, my question about the Wii U one is, how do you – I'm assuming that you use one control stick to move and then one to fire, right?
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. See, I've played this both ways. I played this with and without the Circle Pad Pro. And my complaint when playing with the Circle Pad Pro, you would think that it would be better because you could play it just like you would on the Wii U.
Right.
But the problem is when you play without the Circle Pad Pro, you have – your aiming, because you can aim with when you're playing without the Circle Pad Pro, wherever you move your ship, that's where you're aiming. But when you play with the Pro, you can decouple those. So you get into this kind of weird state where it technically makes you more accurate because you can choose exactly where you want to aim. You just move your cursor over wherever you want to aim and there you go. But the problem is because they're decoupled, it gets really, really weird and floaty. Because
okay, but when I'm playing the game without, I don't have a Circle Pad Pro. I'm using like the face buttons to emulate basically the C stick. Like I'm firing in 8 directions.
Okay, but in what levels though? That's the way it works when you're playing the DNA areas.
Right.
But what about the other ones?
Oh.
Yeah. When you're flying.
Okay.
Exactly. And in the Star Fox style areas, that's where if you use a Circle Pad Pro, it decouples the aiming cursor.
Oh, geez.
The aiming reticle.
Yeah, that would be cool.
It's really weird. So I don't play it like that. And I don't know if there's some way to make them lock. But the thing is, when you're playing without the Circle Pad Pro, it's locked. So you kind of have an idea. It still makes it a little bit difficult and a little bit goofy, but you have an idea of where you're going to be aiming because you can see your little, you know, you're aiming reticule on the screen, and that goes in the direction in which you're flying. But as soon as you bring the CirclePad Pro into play and you start using the second stick, it becomes free floating and you can put it wherever you want. So you can be going over to the right and but aiming to the left, which helps sometimes, but also makes it more difficult.
Right. So basically, instead of playing Star Fox, you're playing Sin and Punishment.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're playing Star Fox and Punishment.
Yep. But it's hard because you're sitting there dodging shots, and you have to keep track of where the shots are and where your ship is, and, you know, in terms of dodging the shots. But then at the same time, you also have to worry about properly aiming instead of just aiming into space. So it makes it difficult.
Yeah, that would screw me up.
Yeah, it was not ideal. So,
I don't find those flying Star Fox stages all that fun anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, I find that the control, they handle very much like the flying levels in Star Fox Adventures. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it doesn't feel very good. Like, you're not really piloting. You're just basically moving that thing around. And
you're on a wire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your ship is also extremely large, too, really, for a lot of the shots that they throw at you. Mm-hmm. Like, your ship really isn't that... It's very large, and it's really not that fast. It doesn't move very quickly around the screen, so a lot of times you have to find yourself... you'll have to kind of plan where you should be ahead of time so you can go there, because your ship won't get there. You know, your ship won't respond quickly enough if you leave it until the last second.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I remember having to deal with that, too.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, you know, it's certainly not a perfect game or anything, but it's... such a technical showcase for the 3DS, especially for an early game. And I think it's just a really cool kind of game that not very many people make, especially with that level of polish, you know. And, you know, one thing that the 3DS versions, because there's the original retail version that I, talked about on the show a couple years ago, and then there's the eShop version that you guys are talking about that is supposedly enhanced and it's cheaper. Mm-hmm. Even when it's not on sale, it's still cheaper than the retail version. And they added CirclePad Pro and other stuff. That stuff's not in the original version. But the nice thing that has over the HD Wii U version is that it's in 3D. And I always felt the 3D effect on this game was awesome.
Mm-hmm. It's okay.
Mainly because it does have that kind of Mario Galaxy thing where the levels, you know, are like these weird planetoid cellular structures, and you're going underneath them and around in weird angles. And, you know, it really felt like a three-dimensional game to me, even though it's relatively simple gameplay.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, maybe it's just a matter of the fact that I played Neo first and on new hardware. So I was a little bit more excited for it, and I was a bit more wowed. But yeah, like, I don't know, like the 3D effect is nice, but looking at this version after seeing the Wii U version, it's not as impressive anymore.
Yeah.
But it would be like, it would blow my mind. Like, it would have blown my mind if I had seen it after playing Steel Diver. That's for sure.
Well, yeah. And I did.
Yeah.
Like, cause I played it that E3, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
so that was kind of crazy.
The 3D effect is good. I don't really necessarily think they did anything too inventive with it in terms of what, I mean, the shots are coming into the screen. I mean, that's really it. I mean, you're looking at a globe most of the time, the equivalent of a globe that you're spinning around, or, you know, shots are coming into the screen. I don't know. It's just, that's the thing. That's for everything this game does right, I play through it and I'm just like, it's pretty forgettable, really. When it comes right down to it, it's a good game, but I can't say it's a great game. Like, I just wish that these guys, with all of their technical prowess on the 3DS, would wrap some sort of a, even if it's a stupid story, some sort of a neat story around it, or maybe create some sort of, I don't know, some sort of world, whatever, but also get just some better art direction. Because right now, I just feel like there's just, the art direction in these games are so boring. They're just very, like, color by numbers.
I think there's a truth to that. I mean, I've always felt with Shining games that their technical graphics capabilities are incredibly impressive for you know, for such a small studio, and they make better looking games than a lot of other bigger studios, but they don't necessarily have the art style and the panache in that area to make the games look really high production value. You know, like they look very glossy, but not always that inventive visually.
Yeah, and I mean,
you know, maybe Jet Rocket 2 coming to 3DS soon will will be the game for you, John.
Yeah,
it's much more of a character-based game. It's a 3D platformer.
Yeah, I mean, in 3D. I just think that with shoot 'em ups, a lot of times, I mean, anybody can make a shoot 'em up if they want to, but I feel like a lot of times it's the art design that really sets the great shoot 'em ups apart. If you look at all the great ones from Treasure,
there's only so much you can do in the form. I know letters going like, oh my god, you get so much variety, and yeah, there is variety, but to an extent, it's a very regressive form of game design. It takes things down to very core elements. You move laterally, you move horizontally, and you shoot.
Yeah, and you can tweak things with power-ups and do kind of freaky stuff like that, but oftentimes the art direction is pretty much everything with these games.
I mean, that's what sets them apart from one another ultimately.
Yeah. Yep. So it's a good game. I mean, if you're in the mood, and I agree with Guillaume saying that that kind of the arcade mode where you're going for high scores is actually a lot more interesting than the main story mode, because you know, it's neat because you can earn coins, you can complete certain tasks and earn coins, and then you can open up stuff like some of the background stuff like profiles for each of the enemies and stuff like that, which is kind of neat. So they do have a little bit of that kind of, you know, a little bit of background info on some of their stuff. So I can't completely fault them for that. But yeah, that's kind of more interesting because, you know, there's questions like, I think on an early stage, you have to, the challenge is to get, I think, 30,000 points. And I have no idea how to do that. So there's some trick to it. And I don't know, but that gets me more interested in the game because I'm like, all right, I got to figure this thing out, because the most I can get, even if I do as quickly as I possibly can, is like 14,500 points or something. So that's a good mode. And that's, I think Guillaume hit it on the head where he said this game is good in a small dose. If you sit there and play through the whole thing, you're just going to be like, it's kind of too much of the same thing over an extended period of time.
Yeah, sure. All right. Well, that is Nano Assault EX for 3DS. And I've barely touched the Wii U version, so hopefully pretty soon I'm going to get a chance to sit down and mess around with that a little bit. Because I got that for like $5 or, you know, whatever it was on sale for. I was like, oh yeah, I'm good for that. All right, so Guillaume, why don't you go next?
So yeah, so I've started playing Mario and Donkey Kong Minis on the Move. And I don't know if you remember, but when we saw it for the first time during that Nintendo Direct, like, it was actually my most anticipated game of all the ones they showed, because it looked new, right?
Yeah.
But turns out, like, I was listening to the Player One podcast, and turns out that it's exactly like this other game, Pipe Dream, I guess, on the NES, which I hadn't played. So, you know, like, it's new to me. But, like, everyone, I think, has seen the concept. Like, you're basically using blocks, and they've got, you know, like, paths on them, and you're putting them in order to create a path from point A to point B. In Pipe Dream, apparently, it was to prevent water from overflowing. In this case, you're just trying to get your minis from the pipe, which is the point A, to the exit. It's a lot of fun. Like, I don't know why, but I'm never really that excited about Mario and Donkey Kong as a series. But when I play them, I'm always like, I'm like, oh yeah, I love these games. You know, how come I'm, you know, I always seem to forget that. I think a big part of why once I'm into them, like I'm just like, I'm having such a great time is because they really do have, you know, like really good music, you know, really good presentation. And call me a fanboy, but I think that Mario, like the franchise, actually adds a lot to this type of game. You know, like I don't think I would be as, you know, having as much fun with it if it were not, you know, like, you know, with cute Princess Peach, like a little doll, you know, just going around and, you know, with kind of like remixes of Mario music in the background. It's just, I don't know, like the presentation is top notch. And I sent you that clip last week, Johnny, of, you know, some of the music that plays. It's, I just can't get enough of it. Maybe I'm going to try to sneak some into the podcast. I don't know. I haven't said my last word. but yeah, and as far as the gameplay goes, I find the game pretty surprising. Like, I think that they've got some really weird, cool ideas that I really didn't expect, you know? Because on the surface, yes, like you're just trying to connect a point to another point with a line. Like it's not that terribly, it doesn't sound terribly exciting, but they, you know, like you're being given these tiles at random. So you got to put them somewhere. Like you've got a maximum of 5 of them and you can't let them overflow. You know, once you've got 5 in, you know, waiting, to be placed, like you got to hurry up and place them somewhere because otherwise you're going to lose the game. So what you can do is actually you can create circuits that the minis aren't even going to march on, and you can create certain items. Like if you create a circle, then you create on the playfield a garbage can where you can just like send your tiles that you don't want. And once you fill that up, you get a special type of tile that will basically, once you place it on the field, it's going to become the tile that's the most appropriate for that spot. Like it's going to connect to 2 tiles, like wherever they are, or 3 tiles or 4 tiles. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can do things like that. Or even like if you can create a circuit that is a figure 8, then you basically create a new tile that is an exit point. So, you know, like if you think like, oh shit, like there's no way I can finish this level, it's too hard to get to the end point. Well, if you can find a way to create your own endpoint, then you don't even have to finish that level.
You can warp, like in Mario.
Yeah, like you just create That's your cool. own exit. You just like plug it there. Like you're like, okay, like this is enough. And you put the exit point and you're done. Oh. And in each level, like there's 3 coins to collect. But if you do, even if you were to exit a level prematurely, you're still taken to this mini game where you got the opportunity to collect them. So there's really nothing lost here. Mm-hmm. You know, like I find it really surprising that the developer was just like, you know what? Like you didn't finish this level, but you managed to create this figure 8 and that's impressive. So we're going to give it to you, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. And so there's like tons of different modes. Like you've got a more straightforward puzzle mode where you've got a specific number of tiles that you've got to place to, you know, to basically to solve the level. You've got these Donkey Kong levels that are huge. You've only got 3 of them, but they're bigger than the 3DS screen, and they're incredibly hard. I still haven't finished one of them. You know, like you have to collect every little clock because you're timed. You know, so you collect every little time bonus, and it's I don't know. So far, it looks impossible, but some
Sounds
people have finished
like
them.
The Donkey Kong game in Nintendo Land. Like, it's bigger than the screen, and it's insanely hard, and there's like 3 levels, but that's enough, because they're humongous, and you'll never get to the end of them.
Yeah, I guess so. And there's these other mini-games that are, you know, more or less fun. I don't think... There's no online leaderboards, and they're all score-based, so it's a little bit, you know, a little bit pointless, but they're still nice distractions. And one of them, in particular, kind of reminds me of Cubello. and it's a lot of fun. There's not enough levels, unfortunately, but it's a lot of fun, and the 3D really, really helps. Like, you turn it off, and I you know, I'll miss the cube, you know, by a wide margin. Mm-hmm. And then, like, I turn the 3D on, and I'm just like, oh, okay, like, this makes sense now. And it's much easier to play.
Cool. That's bad if you can't see 3D, I guess. But for those of us who like 3D, that's really exciting.
Yeah, and so it's a very fun game, really awesome music. And it's kind of being overlooked. Like, if I just, you know, anecdotal evidence, but I don't see anyone on Twitter talking about it. I don't see anyone on forums really playing it. And I'm not sure why. I think that the Mario and DK series has a bad rap, maybe because of 1 or 2 bad games. But the downloadable ones so far, like Minis on the March... I don't remember titles.
Wait, no. See, I think you just hit it. It's not that it's got a bad rap. I don't even think there are any bad games in the series. People can't tell them apart from each other.
Yeah, and I don't know what they're talking about.
I mean, I don't even know if people can tell them apart from each other. I don't think people even know they exist.
Yeah, that's the thing. They aren't marketed at all.
No, yeah, they're just released.
They're just like released and released on like the eShop, where if you don't go on...
Well, the, the original was a GBA game.
Yeah, there was like, well, the GBA game was very different and was more in the vein of the Donkey Kong game that came out on Game Boy, Donkey Kong 94.
It's not as good, but it also has some really cool new mechanics that were not in DK 94. So,
but I
really like it.
There were like two retail games on the DS. The first one was supposedly bad. I haven't played it, but people didn't like it. But it was like the people were like, "Oh, this is way more like Lemmings than Donkey Kong," they didn't really like it. But then there was a DSiWare one that is really really good. If it comes up on Club Nintendo, nab it. And
I think I have that one. I think I did get it from Club Nintendo. I think that's where I got it.
Yeah, I think it was one of the rewards ones. So,
and it's all touch controlled. You're basically just kind of placing tiles. To get the mini Marios like from one place to another, and it's all very timing based. So it's puzzly, but there's an action element too, which is kind of, you know, even going back to the first Mario versus DK, they've always had. I mean, that was a platformer. It's basically a 2D platformer, but you're using your platforming skills to kind of solve puzzle levels. So it's always had that kind of weird puzzly action combination. So as it's a hybrid, I think that's also part of why it's a little bit hard to explain it to people.
But the comparison to Lemmings is apt, you know, like it's sure. really, you're trying to get these little critters that are constantly moving forward to the end, and they're going to walk to their doom if you don't do something about it. Like it's the exact same principle, but I don't know, like it very well made. And you know, there was another retail game after that on the DS. So I don't know if it's just that I don't know what it is, but yeah,
they do a horrible job of getting the word out about this series.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean,
I've been hearing so much good stuff about this one. Actually, on last week's Connectivity episode, Neil and someone else. I'm sorry,
Patrick, I think.
Yeah, they were just kind of raving about it and seemed to think it was awesome. And you know, I've liked all the Mario DK games that I've played, so I was like, I might go download that. I was like you, like from that Nintendo Direct, I thought it was really interesting looking. And I've been looking forward to this for a while. So I actually downloaded it a couple days ago, but I haven't had time to play it yet. I'm glad to hear that you like it too. It makes me feel a lot better about my purchase.
Yeah. And like initially you're going to play the first level and you're going to be, oh shit, this is Bushmo again. I'm going to have to play like 60 tutorial levels before they actually give me something challenging.
Even Picross 3D was like that.
Yeah, yeah, but it's not the case at all. Like 20 puzzles in, I died at least once and I was like, oh shit. And they keep introducing elements still, you know, like I was still learning stuff that I could do in the game. Nice. So yeah, the difficulty curve ramps up quicker than your typical Nintendo puzzle game. So that I really appreciated that.
Yeah, and those guys on Connectivity were saying there's like a crazy amount of content. The game's only $10. So it seems like a pretty solid bet, you know?
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to trying it.
I'm going to be playing it for a long time, I think.
Nice. That's what you want.
Yeah.
Excellent, sir. All right. And James, why don't you go next?
Yeah, so I'm going to talk some more about Darksiders, too.
Oh, boy.
I talked about it last week.
Yes!
Yeah, I know.
Yes!
I hadn't played it a whole lot, and I may have given the impression that I despise this game.
James Hardlock Jones.
Apparently, I saw a post on Gaff, and people seemed to think I didn't like it either, and I didn't think I was being negative about it. I actually was really enjoying
that
game.
Okay, guys, I don't like the first Darksiders, so I edited out everything good
you
said.
Oh, I can blame you.
Yeah, I just hate – I hate the word dark. I hate everything Siders.
Well, I'll be fair. To be fair, the name Darksiders sounds like a marketing exec came up with it.
True.
It's dumb. It's dumb. And the whole Zelda plus Hot Topic thing is kind of dumb, too. It is.
Yeah.
It just is. But you have to accept it.
Zelda with electric guitars, man. Can't you see it? That's brilliant.
The music in this game is really brilliant. It's not what I was expecting at all. It's basically – they basically just hired the Lords of the Ring composers from the sound of it. But fine. Mm-hmm. It's good.
That's okay.
It's a good – let me get this way. It is a good game. It has – decent puzzle structure. The dungeons are they're relatively linear, but they're not bad. The combat, at least for me, has been rather button mashy, but after some feedback I got from a listener, it sounds like it's because I was trying to use the motion controls to dodge, and there is actually a button to dodge, although the Wii U version only tells you to jerk the gamepad, which is really awful. And it makes dodging feel super imprecise because that is super imprecise. Okay. Yeah, there's one of the shoulder buttons actually lets you dodge, but you have to be holding the thumbstick in a direction or you won't do anything. It'll just sort of go like, and there's a lot of things, combat mechanics the game doesn't explain that I've figured out on my own since then, like how to turn into Reaper mode, which the game told you one time, and then when I went and tried it, it didn't work, so I'm like, what the hell?
And
when
you do it, it's kind of awesome, and you will mow people down.
Yeah, there's a gauge you have to fill up. But I was like, why can't I do it? What's wrong? And like, I got to a boss, and they kept telling me to use it. I'm like, I'm trying, but it's not working. And then I realized there's this dumbass gauge at the top that just looks like a spiral pattern. I'm like, oh, that's where the gauge goes. So now I don't want to use it because it took forever to refill. So I'm like, oh, whatever. But so I played through the game. I got through about three more dungeons. I've cleared the... I don't want to go into too much detail, but there's a giant rock monster you take for a ride. That's where I'm at right now. And right before that, there's a boss you have to fight to wake up giant rock monster.
I think I got to that part.
Yeah.
Sounds that's probably very familiar.
I mean, I've just gotten through that dungeon that you ride the rock monster to. The dungeon before that, though, I went to play the boss. And I struggle with them at first because what you have to do is you have to pick up these bombs that he knocks from the ceiling and throw them at him, which means you have to pick them up, turn around, go into first-person mode, or not really, for over-the-shoulder aiming mode, aim and throw before he stomps his foot and blows up and hurts you.
Yeah, that boss is pretty tough.
Yeah, and I struggled with it for the first few times. Then I just decided I'm never going to leave aiming mode unless I absolutely have to, which made dodging impossible, but I just lamed it out and managed to go through it. But I get down to half health. You know, I am in full-on lame-it-out mode right now. And all of a sudden, the game just locks. And you get the really horrible sound that when the Wii U locks that just persists forever.
Yeah. That sound that you feel in your stomach.
I thought, okay. So I climbed up because the gamepad's dead at this point. It's not stopping. So you can't turn it off. You have to unplug the system. I get up, walk over to the Wii U, pull it out of the wall, plug it back in, go back. And thankfully, there's a million checkpoints in this game. So I'm basically right next to the boss. So after, I don't know, 65 seconds of loading from Wii menu to game, which is kind of interminable, but I get to the boss again. I didn't know about the dodging, so I'm jerking the gamepad around to dodge because he hits a lot and he hurts really bad. My arms are getting tired from jerking the stupid gamepad around. And get him down to half health again. Locks again. At this point, I'm thinking, oh, God, there's a bug in this game. And this company that made this game doesn't exist anymore. So I basically went through this cycle every day. I'd play it once or twice, and it would lock the same health point every time. About six times. And then finally I said, maybe I just need to change some variables around. So I basically took Death outside and we had a field trip and we ran around outside for a little while. And I changed his equipment and just ran around like an idiot and came back in and it worked! Yay! So I got to see the rest of the game. I'm going to say right now, because this will happen again at some point in the future with some game someday, that it is the most terrifying experience in the world to be playing a game that you know will never be patched, that you are stuck on something that is causing a bug to prevent you from proceeding.
Yeah, the developer doesn't exist anymore. You know, THQ...
Neither does the publisher.
THQ, you know, got broken up and, you know, no one wanted to buy them. I think someone did finally buy the Darksiders franchise rights,
they bought the
but
license.
They did not.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
did not buy the developer to go along with it.
Nope. They're going to in-house
that. That's my understanding. It's all kind of... I don't know. It was murky because it happened in stages, and they like it felt like they Darksiders even the license didn't even get sold until like the third public auction of the THQ assets.
Yeah, it was very recently.
Yeah. Oh, so they split. I want to say they split the assets up and just did multiple auctions. So it wasn't like they just sort of.
Well, they did the most valuable ones first. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. Which yeah. is to say, none
Darksiders,
of them.
Red Faction and MX vs. ATV went to Nordic Games.
So there maybe one day there will be more Darksiders games, but I think also that, you know, part of what they get with that is like when you buy let's say you buy a digital version of Darksiders 2 on your Wii U or on Steam, now they get the money because they own the rights to it. They don't have to necessarily have to do anything with it. It's just kind of, you know, right. We think the residuals on this game for the next 10 years will be worth what we paid for it. You know, it could be. Could be. Or maybe they're planning the Darksiders movie and anime and comic book and, you know, game sequel. Who knows?
Yeah. So
Uwe Boll has a new has a new movie.
The Darksiders trading card game on iPhone is coming out.
There we go. I think they only paid a few million for the license too. I mean, it wasn't much, which is a shame because there is. I mean, even though I just made fun of the game's sort of like edgy, super duper ridiculous, you know, mentality behind it, there is a certain amount of value to be had in this particular license. There are things in this property that are, you know, the product of people who really worked hard to create a world that actually kind of works.
Yeah, I think more games could be made after every human is dead. That's a cool concept.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's kind of a weird place to cast your game, I'll be
honest.
It's
a weird place to start from.
Yeah.
It is, you know, and when people say post-apocalyptic, they usually mean, hey, cities are in ruins. When this game says post-apocalyptic, it means, hey, this is after the fucking apocalypse.
All the people are dead.
Well, it does keep the voice acting cost down.
You know what's funny is they really went after it with things like voice acting. I'm like, there's a lot of voices in a game where all the people are dead.
Totally unnecessary. Yeah. They could have just had like three voice actors.
They're all demons
for the entire game.
It could have just been death just wandering around going like, man. They're not
all demons and angels. The angels are real assholes in this series, too.
Aren't there only three voice actors anyway? Like Cam Clark and Nolan North and Mark Hamill?
No, actually, you know what? No, it's none of those people. These are all... It sounds like everybody here is English or Irish or doing very good, very convincing accents. Hmm. So no, it's not Cam Clark, thank God.
Now, James, I'm guessing that you would not specifically recommend the Wii U version, but do you think people should check out Darksiders 2 on whatever platform, you know, works best?
So I would say that one thing that I want to give Travis in Los Angeles some thanks for helping me out with this. I made a comment in last week that you can't even put the stupid map on the gamepad while you're playing. You have to pause the game to go view the map. This actually isn't true. So, thank you, Travis.
Of course, the game wouldn't tell you that.
The game never tells you how to do this. Death's skull is hanging up in the top left corner of the gamepad screen. If, for whatever reason, you are inclined to tap his skull, the map shows up. Why? I don't know. But that's what you have to do to get it in there. Otherwise, you see the inventory screen forever.
Yeah. Because apparently making an icon that looked like a map is too much of a problem.
What's worse is once you're on the map screen, there's a button to bring up the main map on the main TV. It's like...
That's absurd. It's like an Easter egg.
For some reason, though, like what I remember from the talk when the game came out way back when is that the UI was terrible.
Oh, it's so bad. It's like, yeah, you can literally zoom in on the gamepad so you can actually hit the button, hit the little tiny little icons.
But I don't even mean just on Wii U. Like, I mean in general. People were complaining about that.
It's obtuse. Yeah. There's too many meters and they're not labeled and yeah.
And there's a whole other set of menus that just relates to Wii U related functionality. So I will say the Wii U version, once I turned off all the Wii U stuff, except for maybe gamepad mode,
The PS3 version.
Well, yeah, I got rid of the dumb shaking of the gamepad to dodge. That's awful garbage. I was able to, you know, use the map on the screen. The game actually became playable, and it stopped hard locking, which is a nice change. I think if you take the Wii U version, you're taking fate in your own hands a little bit, because that version basically came out pretty soon to when everything went down with THQ. So there are probably bugs that they intended to fix that simply aren't fixed. If you get another version, you're probably likely to get a more stable product. I will say that the Wii U version has a bunch of the DLC content, and it's dirt-ass
cheap. True, yeah, because it came out later than the other ones, and so they bundled in all the extra stuff. So that's actually a pretty good argument for it. And you can play it on the gamepad.
I mean, and it looks... You can. And, I mean, it looks good on the gamepad. It works on the gamepad. I mean, I've only done it a little bit because I've got, you know, a nice TV. I don't need to mess around with that garbage. But, you know, it works out well. And, you know, it. Mm-hmm. I've had no issues with it except for the ones I mentioned on the show. Otherwise, it's a perfectly competent game that is an interesting mix of I mean, it's a mix of Zelda overall with Prince of Persia dungeon design. And that's, you know, that's...
And some kind of Devil May Cry or God of War type, you know, combat and
level. Yeah, I mean, we've got some people kind of say that the combat system is more complex than I'm giving it credit for, and that may be true, but damned if the game's taught it to me.
Yeah, man. Well, you've definitely made me, you know, want to go back and play more of it. I'm just, it's on my list. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to get through it assuming it lets me.
So on that topic, I'll finish up new business here with my game. So I'm actually literally looking at a list I've written down by hand on paper of the games I want to finish. Not the games I want to buy or the games I want to start.
Is this a contract that you're making with the world?
Yeah, it's all written in blood.
Yeah, that's right, Johnny. Don't deny yourself the right to just completely just drop a game in the trash and move on to the next one, buddy. I do it all the time, and it feels great.
John actually goes to the store and buys games just so he can throw them
away.
You
know, I don't finish games out of guilt. These are games that I started and I liked and I want to play more of. It's just I chew through games so much, partly because of this damn show. It's hard for me to finish games. And you know, I actually kind of did this last year around this same time. Like the weeks before E3, I find are an ideal time to kind of wrap up on some things. And, cause there's usually not too much coming out. And, you know, my backlog is huge. And look, I own games I will never play. That's a fact, especially on Steam, cause you get them in bundles and shit. And, you know, I don't even know what some of those games are that I have, you know, but I paid 5 cents for them. So I kind of don't care. But some of these are games I spent $60 on, like Ni No Kuni, and I still haven't beaten, and I've put 35 hours into it, so I would kind of like to go ahead and wrap that up. It's just not trivial to do. Like, that game is that's a big console RPG, and I have to sit down and play it for 2 hours at a time to really get anywhere and to feel like I made any progress. So, you know, little by little, I'm getting through that. But anyway, my goal here was just kind of set, like, a list of priorities. And at least, you know, be able to focus a little more on one game at a time so that I can actually finish the ones that I want to finish. And so far, the list was Assassin's Creed 3, check. The Last Story, check. And Luigi's Mansion. And I can now say check because over the weekend when I was traveling back home to Alabama for Mother's Day, I had some time on the plane, you know, had a little bit of downtime, and I got to finish Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon. And it's a game that, you know, we talked about it when it first came out. James blasted through it like he does most things. But for me, I got about halfway through it. I was losing interest a little bit, and, you know, I was playing other things too. I had gotten a Vita around the same time, and so it was fighting for my attention a little bit on handheld gaming. I've slowed down a little bit on Vita stuff now that I've kind of gotten a couple of the things I was the most curious about out of the way. And I wanted to go back and finish some of my 3DS stuff. Fire Emblem is on the list, too, a little farther down. But Luigi's Mansion is like, I can finish this game in a couple more hours, and then I'll feel good about doing so. And it's a game that I had anticipated tremendously before it came out. It was probably my favorite 3DS game of last year at E3. And then when it came out, I started playing it. I don't know, there's something slightly disappointing about it, or maybe it's just... You know, it is a super solid game. There's something that's just not that sexy about Luigi's Mansion. You know, it's not the most exciting game to play. Mm-hmm. And it is inherently repetitive. You know, and people said that even about the first game, and that game's like 4 hours long, and it's still repetitive because the mechanics are so simple.
And I think that game does a little bit more in that you've got like the picture ghosts and you've got the booze you're hunting down. I mean, I think there's more variety in that one than there is in this one. At least,
well, it depends. There's more variety in the combat. In Dark Moon, you know, and I give the guys at Next Level a lot of credit for is that there's a lot more variety in the environments and in some cases the objectives. And there's a lot to be said for that. There's also, you know, they have some actual bosses that are not just, you know, a ghost with a funny hat, but actual, you know, they call them possessor ghosts, and they're possessing giant animals or pieces of the mansion. And those play out very much like big grand scale boss battles. Now, I have some issues with some of them in terms of they're kind of frustrating, or it's not very clear how you're supposed to harm the boss. And there was one of them I played several times before I figured out what the hell was going on. There was another that
Spider.
I figured out how to beat it very early on, but just the process of beating it just takes forever. And I was exhausted by the end. But my biggest problem, I think, with this game, I mean, it's so charming. There's so many things I do like about it. But it leans way, way too heavily on the combat, you know, which is, you're sucking up ghosts with a vacuum. There's not much to it. You hold down the shoulder button and you pull the joystick in the opposite direction until it dies. And, you know, over the course of a 4-hour game with the first one, that's fine. Over this game is probably 10 hours long, and they don't really do a whole lot more with it than they did 10 years ago. And this game really, you know, it doesn't introduce any kind of new combat mechanic over the course of the game. It stays simple all throughout. And that would be fine if it leaned more on the puzzle solving and the exploration. But actually, I think, weirdly enough, the puzzles in the game, although they're usually really good, they seem kind of spread out. And a lot of rooms seem to exist solely to give you kind of an arena to fight ghosts. And there are missions that they'll send you in where it really feels like it's just kind of, there's some doodad, some, you know, something that you have to get on the other side of the mansion. And there's just a bunch of rooms in between you and that thing. And they're just all full of ghosts. And you just have to go through them. You're not looking for the ghosts. You know, you're not like trying to figure out how to get from one place to another. It's like, it's a pretty straightforward path in a lot of cases. It's just going through kill rooms, basically. And fighting the ghosts is fun at first, like. But it never changes. And the problem is that it's a pacing thing. And as you get deeper and deeper into the game, you get into more interesting environments, I would say. I think the last mansion of this is really good. And it has just kind of a structure and a style to it that made me think back to the original game and think, wow, this is a mansion that's actually worthy of being Luigi's Mansion. Like, this is as good as the one mansion in the first game. It's not as big, but it feels as tightly constructed, where some of the other ones are a little, I don't know, a little gimmicky, or they're just not as much fun to go through.
Or like I said when I was talking about it, they don't feel like they're connected a lot of times. It feels like the individual sections of the mansion are ostensibly in the same place, but not really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know the feeling, and it doesn't help that they're constantly warping you in and out. And so you kind of lose a sense of place, you know, because you're not actually walking from one place to another. I feel like these missions could have been broken up as checkpoints or however you want to do it, without actually removing you from the mansion and then putting you back into it. You know, I feel like they could have left you in the mansion, and then these places would have felt a little more contiguous, you know, and you would have felt like, oh yeah, this hallway connects these two sections and I know how to get back and forth there. And it's all very directed, because you always go in kind of knowing what you're supposed to do and you just kind of go there, you know, whereas the first game really did feel like it was all about discovery. It was all about going in there and just not really being sure where you should go next. And that's fun. But just to get back to the combat real quick, it reaches a point of just absurdity. There is a mission in the final mansion, the final world of the game, where and it's funny that they actually record the stats on this, because you can go back and look and just see how ridiculous it is. There was a mission where I sucked up 54 ghosts in one mission. Over the
span,
how
many ghosts were there in the first game?
Like 100 total.
Ghosts. There are like 100 picture ghosts.
God,
I think there were only 50 picture ghosts.
Okay, and there were 50 booths.
I think it was 100. But yeah. That's the thing. These are mostly kind of low-level ghosts. You know, none of them are really that hard. There's a couple that are more like mini-bosses, I guess. You know, they're more difficult and they have different patterns. But they're not character ghosts. Like, they're not unique. It's just a style of ghost. You probably fought it before. Now you're fighting it with a couple of weaker ones kind of floating around you, making it more difficult, you know. But it's all stuff you've done before. You're just rehashing the same mechanics. It's almost like it feels like a test. It feels like they're testing your mastery of this stuff.
They are. I mean,
but they do it over and over, and it stretches it out. And over the course of like half an hour, I think it took me to beat this mission, and I fought so many ghosts. I'm not kidding. My thumb hurt by the end of this mission from holding the gamepad, the circle pad, in the opposite direction for so long while I was trying to fight these ghosts.
So it's funny you said that, because when you said there was a mission in the last mansion, I knew immediately what mission you were going to mention.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And it's on a timer, too.
It's absolutely horrible design.
Because you have to clean out rooms before they get critical or whatever, however EGAD explains it.
They're putting all this pressure on you too. Like they make it, I don't know that it's actually timed.
It is. You can run out of time. Because I did almost at the very end the first time I played it. So I had to do it again.
Yeah, like you see rooms on the map and they're going yellow and then they're going red, and that means the ghost infestation is so bad and you have to go and suck them up right away before it, you know, and it's not fun.
No, it's
and
not.
And it's too bad because that mansion, like the mission before that, I was loving it. This mansion has like portals that allow you to take items from one room into another room, and like, so it has these puzzles that are stretched out across the entire world, and you have to kind of think about, where did I see something that I could light on fire that I could bring here to melt this thing? You know, like it's really, really clever stuff. And then the mission after that I thought was much better as well. They put you in this boss fight that is not really like anything you've done before, and it's really impressive. It's just this one mission where it feels like whoever at Next Level or at Nintendo is so in love with this vacuuming mechanic, they just got carte blanche and they said, why don't you just make the most bullshitty vacuuming level and that's all you do, and make the person just fucking sick of it by the end. Well, like, I said,
when I ran out of time on that one, I almost didn't play the game anymore, because I was like, do I really want to do this again? And that's
the hallmark of bad design right there, where you basically exasperate the player to such a degree that if they do lose, it's not even worth their time to pick up the joystick.
I mean,
again.
And considering this is the dead end of the game, like
this should be the ultimate payoff for you.
I
not
should be
the ultimate
excited
pain in the ass
to keep playing. You know, and you've just beat me into the ground with like the part of the game that I like the least, and you have just beaten me over the head with it as much as you know, fathomable. It's just really bad. I think it's just a shame, you know.
But that's one mission, right?
It's the longest mission in the game by a long shot.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes.
Because I was excited for this game too, but then, you know, I was stuck in Etrian Odyssey 4, and then I moved on to stuff in my backlog. I wanted to get around to this, and while I was playing Mario and Donkey Kong, I was like, oh yeah, fucking Mario. I should get, like, maybe this is the time to get Luigi's Mansion, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I was just like, I'm in a mood for more of this franchise. But right now, I can't say I'm really looking forward to it anymore.
I don't want to turn people away from this game, because it is...
I don't either.
Overall, a very good game. But there are...
Yes, I agree. It has low points that are very low, and that are very disappointing, because I think when the game clicks, when it's doing what you want it to do, and when it's surprising you, and it's giving you... It's taking you to places you haven't seen before, and it's throwing really cool puzzles at you that you really couldn't do in very many other games, because of, you know, it is based very much on this flashlight and vacuum kind of dual mechanic. I think it's wonderful. I think technically it's a marvel, you know. There's a whole lot that I love about this game. The presentation is just glorious, but some of the gameplay design I find very questionable, especially the combat stuff, you know. And if you're gonna fill it up with this much combat, you've got to have more variety in the ghosts. You've got to make them smarter. You've got to give Luigi, I don't know, more abilities, or make the environments more meaningfully different from each other. I don't know the answer. There's a lot of different ways you could go with it, but this feels the specifically the combat where you're fighting the ghosts, it feels stretched to the point of almost breaking in this game. There's just too much of it. It's a shame, because I don't think it's too much Luigi's Mansion. I think the exploration and the puzzle solving is, I think they justified having a lot more content of that type than was in the first game. And I think they justified making a longer Luigi's Mansion game. But making me defeat 54 generic ghosts in one mission is not the answer. That's not contributing to my enjoyment of this game. That does not make me feel this game is a better value. So, you know, I just want to warn people, especially if you're not finished with the game yet. I mean, there's some hard times there. That mission really almost broke me, and I was really upset with the game after that. But it does improve after that. The last little bit is better. You know, overall, again, I'm with James. I think the game is definitely worth playing. I think it's a great game, but it's flawed. You know, I just have to point that out. A severely flawed game, unfortunately. But I still really do like it. And I hope Luigi's Mansion will stick around in some form. I'd love to see it come back, get some kind of refresh, not just a huge expansion like this is, of just let's kind of do the same thing but make it way bigger. I'd love to see it kind of rebuilt a little bit and re-examined. But I don't know the best way to do that. And it may be a while before that's necessary.
What about the multiplayer?
Yeah. I did get to try a little bit of local multiplayer with my friend Kevin, and it was an odd experience because the multiplayer basically drops you and your friends in kind of like a randomly generated mansion, or maybe it's not random. I don't know. It felt kind of random. But it's basically you play it one floor at a time, and the objective, although it doesn't actually tell you this, but the objective is just find all the ghosts and suck them all up. I didn't know, are we trying to find an exit? Are we trying to collect the coins? Is there an objective somewhere that we're going to know it when we see it? As it turns out, it's just find the ghosts. And a lot of the rooms don't even have ghosts in them. You know, like you have to kind of look at whether the lights are on or not to know if there's even anything worth finding there. Kevin has never played any Luigi's Mansion. He was so confused because the game really doesn't give you any kind of introduction. It doesn't give you any instructions. And it is the full Luigi's Mansion experience in terms of you have the flashlight, the dark light, the vacuum. You can also, you know, blow the vacuum in both directions. You have all this combat where, you know, you can build up the energy and then tap the A button to kind of supercharge it and fight them all down. It's fairly complex if you haven't been, you know, playing the game and learning how to do it. And he was very confused. And I was trying to play the game while also teaching him. And by the way, there's a very strict time limit on it. And the first three times that we tried to play this, we couldn't even get past the first level. So it's not very friendly to like casual players. Wow. And we were using download play. I mean, he doesn't own the game. So it lets you share the game with other people, which is great. But it's not actually that friendly for people who aren't very familiar with Luigi's Mansion.
But it's not unlocked from the start, right?
Yeah, I think you have to make it through the first mansion to unlock it.
Mm. Yeah, they probably want to make sure that at least someone knows what he's doing.
Yeah, and I did, but I can't play the game effectively and try to teach him what the hell's going on at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's not like you're running around and the ghosts are just there and you start fighting them. They're hiding. You know, you have to solve puzzles. There's like warp points and shit. Like, it's very complex level design. You know, which if you're an experienced player, that's a good thing. And I can see how this would be pretty fun to play with other people who have already beaten the single player mode and really know what's going on. But I was shocked at how unfriendly it was to a new player.
So you can't toggle certain elements on and off like you can in like say like Brawl or something like that, where you can turn this off and turn that off.
So.
You can't do that?
Not that I saw. There were no options, really.
That's surprising. Usually Nintendo's pretty good about that.
Well, Sakurai is pretty good about that.
You know, you can turn off all the hard stuff.
Yeah.
True. Yeah.
But it does seem potentially fun. I know the Penny Arcade guys are just totally crazy about it. Again, I think if you're playing with some other high-level players, you could probably have a really good time because it is very much cooperative. And you don't have enough time for just one person to run around and do it all. You have to coordinate. You have to split up. And, you know, say, hey, I found some ghosts over here. Can you come help me out? You know, and then they try to find a shortcut to get over there in time. Like, it's pretty cool stuff, actually. And you can play it online as well. But I feel like I don't think it has voice chat. I feel like I would have heard if it had voice chat. And without that, this would be kind of hard to play online, I feel. Because it is very much cooperative and it's kind of strategic. But it's an interesting mode. You know, I don't know that the game needed it, but it's pretty cool. You know, and some people seem to be really enjoying it. So I definitely respect that. But yeah, Luigi's Mansion, you know, it's for me, it's, you know, not a perfect game by any means, but it is something I'm very glad got made and I'm very glad I got to play it. And, you know, I hope some lessons were learned. It's very ambitious for a studio like Next Level that's been mainly making sports titles. This is a totally different ballgame for them. And, you know, I think it shows that they do have the chops to make a really big game like this in a different kind of genre. But I do kind of wonder, these problems that I have with it, do those come from Next Level? Do they come from Nintendo? Is someone just kind of being like, no, you have to have way more ghosts? You know, I don't know whose fault that stuff is, but I hope they've learned some lessons from it.
Well, like the game has been charting twice now, 2 months in a row on the NPDs.
It's selling great.
Yeah, so, you know, who knows? Like, perhaps we won't have to wait as long for the next one.
Well, we're going to probably have to wait at least 3 or 4 years because that's about how long this one took to develop.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like there will be more Luigi's Mansion, and that is a good thing because it's a really, really cool franchise that was dormant for a long time. So I'm glad to see it back for sure.
Cool.
All right, guys. Well, that is going to wrap up new business and indeed the episode. So thank you very much for listening. Thanks again to our friend Billy, who had to step out a little bit early. Hope you will try to play some Monster Hunter with him on Monday night and in the future as well. That's a weekly feature. It's recurring. So keep an eye on the website and find out the next time we're doing that. And of course, thank you very much to everybody who wrote in, or at least most of you. And as always, you can send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And we hope that you will. That's all. Thanks, everybody. We'll be back soon.
Bye. Later.